Accession number 29996, Mr. Mike Brown, Reel 5. Now, what happened then when you got back from D-Day? You know, you got back and we talked about how you felt.
Yes.
What did you do? Did you just drop it back into the old routine?
No. What happened? We landed at New Haven. We all had a bath and a shower there. They was all laid on for us. They must have thought we were all very dirty, but we'd only been there for a night or so. And then we went back to our depot at Fargo for the night. I don't know why. And then the next day we went back to Downampney, where the people who in the squadron that hadn't gone on D-Day had already been briefed for another operation. And some gliders were already loaded up, ready to go. And some of us, about 10 crews, were needed to make up the... When we got back to Downampney, they wanted some of us to go to join the other lot and go again, you see. And we were briefed there and then to go. This was, I think it was Wild Oats, it was called, that operation. And we were going to go any time. That is really why we'd all had these bits in our paybook saying, help this man back. Well, this went on for a few days. And then eventually it was cancelled.
So you just stayed at Downampney then?
Yes, we stayed at Downampney.
And so how had things changed? You know.
Well, some of the crews changed around, and I changed, and my first pilot was Bob Gear.
So was he a staff sergeant?
Yes, oh yes. All the first pilots were staff sergeants.
And it's Bob Gear.
Yeah.
How do you spell Gear?
G-E-A-R.
And what was he like?
He was a very amusing man. Liked his drink, but very humorous. He's a very nice man, actually. He's in a home now, unfortunately.
But was he a good pilot?
Yes, good pilot.
And did he continue the sort of training?
Oh, yes, yes. It probably allowed me to do a bit more, if anything.
Were there any other changes besides getting a new pilot?
Not really. The people who'd gone with us on D-Day and weren't rebriefed, as it were, they went off on leave. And then after a week, when our new operation was cancelled, we went on leave. And then when we came back, we were spent...
Now, how were you treated when you were on leave? I'm quite interested, because did people know what you'd done? Did they understand what you were as a glider?
No. When I got home, my mother said to me, I thought you'd be in France, you see. And I said, well, I've been and come back. Which I think rather... They obviously weren't used to people travelling at that speed from the First World War, were they? Otherwise, there wasn't really any difference.
Were you allowed to talk about it?
Yes, nobody said don't talk about it. Nobody said there was no restrictions at all like that. But...
Now, what happened when you got back? Were there any changes in training or methodology?
No, well, the next few days, weeks, we spent our time ferrying gliders from from Netherhaven back to Downampney to replace those that had gone on D-Day.
Anything happened, or was it just...
No, we just used to go. That was more or less all we did all day. We were briefed in the morning. We went to, and then we were flown to Netherhaven, picked the glider up, and brought it back. And that was our sort of routine for a while, until presumably we had enough. And then In the next few weeks, we were briefed for various operations.
Now, there's quite a few of these. Tell me about.
Well, there was apparently, so the books say, 16 operations between D-Day and the time we went to Arnhem. Some, of course, never got as far as us. Others we had an inkling of and had a sort of preliminary briefings. And one or two very nearly went the whole way. I don't think we ever got down as far as going to the runway before they were cancelled. But very often we went to bed at night thinking we were going to go next morning, and suddenly the cooks would come round and tell us the whole thing is off. I think the cooks were told first because they used to cook us bacon and eggs, you know, the operational thing. And they used to come round and say, operation cancelled. And of course, everyone who'd been trying to sleep, all suddenly they were all awake, chattering. And then we went back to have a proper sleep.
Were you relieved then when the operations were cancelled?
Well, I don't think we were. We were in a certain way, but we knew we had to go sometime. I don't think there was really a question.
Well, now, was there any training? Or
no, we didn't do a lot of training. We did one or two route marches. And during that time, those couple of months, one stage we went on a sort of holiday camp outside Cheltenham for the squadron. They put up some tents there, and we went there and had a rather slack time, as it were. And we used to go on these sort of initiative scheme things, you know, where we had treasure hunts and that sort of thing. We used to go around in pairs to try and find, you know, clues and sort it out and who'd be first and all that. But there wasn't really much training, to be honest, apart from the flying. You see, we were flying off and on, you know, at least once a week we would fly. Probably not for very long. Sometimes, quite a lot of us would go up at once. Other times, there'd only be about 10 crews going up at a time.
Any of these mass takeoff and landing exercises?
I don't remember any during that time. I don't remember any. I know one time there was one, but now you think, and we went. We went on it, but we went to pick the gliders up afterwards.
Now, what happened next? And as we moved towards Arnhem, operation.
Well, we were briefed. There were two real briefings for Arnhem. One was the one that we never went on, Operation. Gosh, I can't remember what it's called now. This was when the British 1st Airborne Division was going to do the whole lot, all three bridges. And at that particular time, we would have gone to Nijmegen. But that, that was cancelled. That would have been a week before we actually went. And then we were briefed for the new, the real operation, Market Garden.
And what do you remember about the briefings?
Well, I remember we were all amazed at where we were going to land, which was so far from the bridges. We could not understand, glider pilots could not understand, why no gliders were landing anywhere near the bridges. I mean, we'd been so successful on D-Day. And after all, that's what gliders were for, to land a platoon of men, complete, ready for action, at one spot. And on the previous briefing, the one that was cancelled, some people had gone away from our squadron, a couple of crews, and they were going to do they were going to land near a bridge, which I don't know which bridge, but they were going, they were training to land somewhere near one of the bridges. But when the actual time came, we were all these miles away. It's like from here to Watford, isn't it? And expect somebody to be surprised we'd got there. That was the thing that we, none of them, we glider pilots really, I don't think any of us could really understand that.
Now, what else were you told? Were you told what your load would be?
Well, we found out this time it was King's Own Scottish Borders. And I found out later it was number 5 platoon.
First, which battalion, do you know?
Oh, no. Well, it was the airborne one.
Well, we'll check. They can check that, can't they?
Yes.
Was there any vehicles, or was it just a platoon?
No, I don't think. I think there might have been one of these handcart things. I'm not sure. No vehicles. No, it was just the platoon, and it was the battalion. I don't want to say 7th battalion. I'm not sure.
I will check it out. I can't remember.
I do know when I went up to Edinburgh Castle a few years ago now, the King's Own Scottish Borderers were on guard there, and I said, last time I saw your people, and they knew all about it, you know, landing in Holland. Their history, regimental history.
Now, were there any more, anything else that you recall about the preparations beforehand?
No, I know we didn't have toggle ropes this time, which we could have probably done with if we crossing the river. No, I don't really remember anything else. But we were, of course, confined. We'd been confined to camp, of course, off and on for these other operations. And we'd been confined to camp for the one that was cancelled. Then we were allowed out that weekend. And then we were confined to camp again for quite a few days. But, you know, that's the RAF, everybody. And
now, how did you feel before? I mean, you know, cause the first time you've been almost curious. You know, how did you feel this time?
Well, I wasn't. I think we were probably all a little bit overconfident, having, you know, things had gone so well before. And really, as far as the flying part was concerned, they went well this time for most of us.
Now, what happened? Anything about the what time did you take off? You went over on what
day? On the 17th, on the Sunday morning.
And what time did you take off? Which wave were you in?
Well, the first wave, probably about 9 o'clock, I would think. Something like that. Somewhere around there, I would think. It was a beautiful day. A little bit hazy and misty, but it was a beautiful day. No trouble with takeoff. People who were going in the second wave, quite a lot of them, glider pilots, came and waved to us as we took off. And some of them, you know, we never spoke to again, you see.
And you were being towed again by Dakotas?
Dakotas, yes. It was all from down. And I remember there were 45 gliders went off this time. And I think 45 went off the next day as well. So in the meantime, the squadron had increased in size. A lot of people had come in, made it larger.
And just to check, you were still in the same squadron?
Same E squadron, yes. Oh, yes.
Now, what do you remember about the flight out?
Well, I remember it was very hazy in parts, and aircraft seemed to be coming from all over the place. But as we got over the sea, went over the sea and got towards the Dutch coast, I remember over on the left-hand side, coming from behind and sort of diagonally going across, were Dakotas. They obviously taking paratroopers. And it was a magnificent sight. I don't know how many there were. There must have been 50 or more. And underneath, on the sea, which was all glistening, there were SE rescue vehicles, boats, distributed all along our route, ready for anybody that that went down. I didn't see anyone go down, but they were there. And the odd fighter plane was sort of swooping down if there were any, I suppose if there was any ack-ack or anything, but it didn't actually trouble us. But really, there were so many gliders. I mean, there were the gliders in front of us, but a lot more behind us, I'm sure. And when you think, you see, 300 gliders, that 600 aircraft in the air at once, just... I mean, people nowadays can't imagine that, can they? That sort of number. Hundreds of them, you see. And we had uneventful journey, really. And as we got near the landing zone, the pathfinders had been there and put up flares, you know, smoke thing. But we found our field quite easily.
Now, what happened during the approach then to the landing zone? Any fire? Or
no fire, nothing. I mean, people say they knew we were coming. They did not know we were coming. No doubt about that. We went down there peacefully and landed.
Now, where exactly did you land?
S landing zone, I think it is. LZS, I think.
And where is that? Is it near anywhere that we might know?
Well, the nearest place is Wolfhazer.
Do you know how you spell that?
Wolfhazer, I think. Wolf.
Oh, that's near enough. Now, what was the landing like?
A good landing. Little girl did that. A good landing, no trouble. No trouble.
And no fire at all.
No fire at all, that I can remember.
Passed off in the toe and everything went well.
Yes. Could have been a training.
What height would you cast off at?
I think it was about...
Because you cast off, not the fire, yes.
That's right, about 2,500. I think it was 2,000 probably. And we went in. There were a few down before us, not many. And we landed. And of course, this time we didn't have to take any tails off or anything, you know, for unloading. And the told the blokes, they came, they got out and said, thank you very much for a good journey. And then we actually went and helped one or two other glider pilots, help them take the tails off. Because some of them hadn't done it, and we were, of course, experienced men, having done it once before.
So you go to a newly landed glider.
Yes, one that
had a truck or something.
Yes, that's right, and help them. Yes, help them take, you know, if they wanted a hand, because you had to hump the tail about once it was on the ground a bit.
And still nothing happened. Still
no
fire.
No fire.
Now, where had the KOSB gone?
They went.
Do you know where they went?
They went. We'd done our job. We went to rendezvous at a King's Own Scottish border, a piper who was playing Blue Bonnets over the border. Well, we were told that. I didn't recognise it. We rendezvoused that, and we were told where to go, and we went to a clearing in the wood and sat on a tree trunk. I remember that, whilst everyone... whilst we waited for all the others.
Is this a rendezvous for KOSB or a rendezvous?
No, for glider pilots. E Squadron, particularly, glider pilots.
Now, what happened then while you were at the rendezvous? It's in a wood.
It's in a wood, or shrubbery sort of thing. Well, we waited there for quite a while for everyone to come. That is when, as I say, I ate my orange and cut it up with my fighting knife. Because I was very thirsty, I remember that. Terrible thirst I had. We then marched off in the afternoon. I mean, I suppose that would be 1 o'clockish when we landed there, somewhere around there. We marched off in the afternoon towards, actually, Wolfhazer. And
still
I don't...
no resistance.
No, nothing for us at all. I think there was firing in the distance, but... As far as we were concerned, nothing. We got there and we went to the lunatic asylum. I remember that.
In Wolfhazer.
In Wolfhazer. And...
Now, what was the situation when you got there?
Well, we just went there and we were... I think a lot of the lunatics had got out and were wandering about. I do remember there seeing, I'll never forget, a tray, a couple of trays of grapes. And I was so thirsty. I remember eating those quite a lot. And it was whilst I was there, we were going to be told where to spend the night. And then...
Hang on. Did you see any of these inmates?
Well, saw the odd ones.
What were they doing? I mean, how were they behaving?
Well, they were just sort of wandering about lost.
Were they behaving in an unusual fashion or just...
Well, I think they were just dazed, completely dazed and lost. A bit like we were.
So, sorry, you were saying, what happened to you?
Well, then I was then sent... As a young lad, I was then sent to Wing Headquarters. They wanted someone from E Squadron to go to Wing Headquarters, which is the same as the regimental, you know, a battalion headquarters. You know, we had wings and squadron. And they wanted some extra people there, one from each squadron, partly to act as a sort of runner and whatever. And I was sent.
And where was...
Well, that again was in Wolfhazer. That was in a house in Wolfhazer.
And you were going to be a runner?
Well, yes, really. And we spent the night there.
That's the first. That's the night of the 17th, 18th.
That's right. We spent...
Anything happening? Any German attacks or resistance?
No, I don't remember anything there at all happening to us. Next morning, there was a scare... about some Germans coming up the railway line and everyone bustled about. And I went out on one of these airborne bicycles, most uncomfortable thing, to E Squadron, find out where E Squadron was, so as I knew where they were. And I think I probably Major Jackson had to come back for a meeting or something like that. And... We spent that morning there, and then later on in the afternoon, we started marching towards Arnhem. Though, of course, we only got as far as Oosterbeek on the outskirts. We were still a long way.
Now, what happened on that march?
Nothing really happened. The only thing I can remember on that is we passed that staff car that had been shot up by one of the parachute battalions going through, and some quite high major general or something had been shot up. It's in all the pictures. If you look at any of the books, the pictures there, and I say, oh, I went past there. Otherwise, I don't really remember anything unusual there. We got to Oosterbeek and went into a large house.
Now, do you know what the house was?
I don't know what it is called.
It wasn't the hotel, the
Hartenstein. No.
No, wasn't that right?
No, it was, as you go in, Hartenstein would, shall we say, was on the right as you go towards Arnhem in Oosterbeek. We went up a narrow lane to the left. And there was a big house up there, very big house. And that was going to be Wing Headquarters. By then, you know, it was getting dark. And they sent me, and another, they said, go and find Brigade Headquarters. It's supposed to be such and such a building. Well, I went off with this bloke, and eventually we found it. It was back. We had to go back towards Wolfhazer, and it was a house up another long lane on the right-hand side. And funnily enough, when I got there, the intelligence officer, he'd been in the same regiment that the 110th RAC. He'd been the intelligence officer there. Funny, isn't it, you see? So we had a little chat, and I told him where wing headquarters were. And then he said, right, that's good. On your way back, call in at the Hartenstein Hotel, divisional headquarters, and tell them where your headquarters are, and also confirm that the Air Landing Brigade headquarters were, you know, where they were. And we wandered back, we went back down this very dark lane, because all the trees were overhanging, it was very dark, and got to the Hartenstein, and I went in, and eventually I got to where there was a map and two or three officers standing around, and I told them, I said, I've come to explain where this, where we were, where the headquarters were. And he said, right, where is it? Got the map on the table. And I pointed with my finger. I said, there and there. Don't point with your finger. I said, well, I've got nothing else. So he gave me a pencil or something. And eventually I told him where the both headquarters were. And then I went back to our wing headquarters. And later on spent the night. We took it in turns going outside on guard, outside the house.
What do you remember about guard duties? What was that like?
Wasn't good. Things were further down the road, further on, away from Oosterbeek, awful lot of fighting and noise going on, and we felt that any minute someone might break through. And I believe it was where the King's Own Scottish Borders were fighting near a railway line afterwards. But that was very, you know, there were all sorts of noises and shouting and firing going on down there. But nothing actually happened to us. And that was that day. And the next day we moved nearer to the Oosterbeek Centre, nearer to a house nearer the Hartenstein Hotel. And we spent... The wing headquarters spent the next few days in different houses there. And I went out several times with the padre or the adjutant or somewhere. And also going out taking messages to E Squadron.
Now, what exactly were you doing when you went out? I'll come back to the message, but what were you doing when you went out with the padre?
Well, really just went with them and he was checking up. Really, we were just a sort of escort with them. And perhaps the odd wounded person he would attend to and you might sort of help a little bit. But nothing really very much.
And so there's Padre. Now, what about the messages to E? Any problems? Had they moved?
Oh, yes, they kept moving from place to place. In fact, nearly every time I went out, they'd move to another spot. Getting closer and closer to the Hartenstein as things went from bad to worse, as it were.
Now, did you see much of the fighting as you were going out and about? Or
no, I didn't. We could hear it, but I didn't see much of it until the following Sunday.
Now, what about food? What were you doing?
Well, we had our ration packs, 24-hour ration packs.
Now, what was in them? What were they like?
Well, they had this porridge that you put water on and soup that you heated up. I can't remember very well. I think there were biscuits in it and some boiled sweets. They were very good packs, to be honest.
How many of them did you have? Because that's just 24 hours. What did you do after that?
Well, I can't remember whether we had to. I think we must have only had one each. Well, we got hungry then. And some people were going through some of these houses looking to see what preserves had been left. And water was very short. Of course, all the water was turned off. We filled the bath. And, of course, every time a mortar or something came over, mortar fire, there was a lot of mortar firing towards the end, showers of dust came down into the bath. lot of mortar firing. It gradually got worse and worse and very nearly continuous.
Now, what was it like being under fire like that? You'd not had it before.
No. There wasn't much you could do about it except hope one didn't come your way.
Did it make you nervous or...?
No, I don't think so. I wasn't... it didn't worry me that, really.
Any close escapes or...?
Well, there was one I was coming down the stairs in this house, and as I got to the bottom, a mortar or something must have gone out just outside the front door. Unfortunately, there was a cloth or something over the glass part of it, but the blast all came in, and I was staggering about like a... I kept on my feet, but only just. That was the worst bit there.